I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Wrestling fans, is I, CM Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 61, and this time out we continue our look at the Royal Rumble month here on the eve of the Royal Rumble, with a look at the third time, yes, third time that Stone Cold won the Royal Rumble. Making him the only man to win the Royal Rumble three times. That, of course, being the Royal Rumble of 2001. Also featured a young, spry Drew Carey. Not Jim Carey, but Drew Carey. Two different people. All that and more, of course, our continued look at the Raws of 1998. Some NXT news and all that and more right here on CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. And, yeah, it is the eve of the Royal Rumble. Of course, you're probably listening to this a couple hours beforehand, so hopefully this will be an enjoyable thing to get you in the mood for the Royal Rumble, or as I like to call it, the ascension of AJ Styles finally in WWE Royal Rumble. and, of course, that's part of the news that's come out this week. There's been so much... There's a lot of news that's actually come out this week. So much to talk about. NXT saw the debut of one Rich Swann. You saw, of course, the setup for a triple threat main event in coming weeks. Now, mind you, that had been filmed ahead of time, so there's spoilers, so people might have known that. But also what happened this week, though, was the taping at the University of Central Florida, which saw a couple of surprises, which we'll get to. One that would be actually broken by WWE itself on social media. And what's going to lead to a very interesting program. We'll get to that. Actually, I want to start off with something that, quite frankly, Hairball and TWK and a lot of people have been hounding me on. And they've just been hounding me and hounding me. It was very much like, you know, the Thanksgiving when CM Jew had his little shoot promo podcast work where he blamed the WWE for everything. And so they were very much like, oh god, you gotta comment on this. So, and I've commented it on Griff Down and stuff, and that, of course, is the thing that everybody wants to know my opinion on. What's my opinion about Sonny doing porn? Because apparently when people hear the word porn, they think of me. As I look around my room, I wonder why. um, It's a very interesting story, I think, because it puts WWE in kind of a pickle. And there was an article by on the Cage Side Seats that I think really perfectly exemplifies why they need to make a response to this. Because ultimately it comes down to Triple H saying that the reason China can't be in the Hall of Fame is because, you know, whether it be his daughter's or somebody else's child, Googling her name and the first thing that's coming up is foreign films. Which, honestly, you do that, that's not what happens. But it is what worries him and a lot of people. And to be quite honest, I've said it before and I'll say it again. That's a very reasonable reason. I disagree with it. I think it pushes Christian values and those things. But if, at least if they're coming out and saying that's the reason, they're being honest about it. If that's the honest reason. Again, there's questions about whether that's really the honest reason. You know, there is apparently somewhat still heat between China and, I don't want to say Triple H, I think it's more heat between China and Stephanie. That's a different story. That being said, if that's going to be their stance, whether I agree with it or not, that, and particularly when they apparently take Hulk Hogan out of the Hall of Fame because he said a bad word in the privacy of his own home that was recorded illegally, then you have to take Sonny out. Don't get me wrong. I think Sonny should belong. I think China and Hulk, they should all be in there. Whether it be small or major transgressions should not, in my mind, when it comes to a Hall of Fame, major or minor transgressions that are outside of the field, in particular, or in old age and when they're retired, should not mean that they're taken out. Because it's not just disrespectful to their work that they did, it's disrespectful to all the wrestlers who worked with them that contributed to their career. It's, you know, Hulk Hogan as an example. You know, taking him out of the Hall of Fame and not even mentioning, really, or talking about the WrestleMania 3 main event, it's not just detrimental to him, it's detrimental to Andre the Giant. Because it was Andre the Giant's most shining moment. That was probably the biggest moment of his career. Being in the main event of WrestleMania 3 and setting the standard for what a main event match at WrestleMania is supposed to be. It's the construct that WWE has followed forever after since. So I think they should all be in the Hall of Fame, but if their stance on China is porn, you know, puts them in an awkward position that as a corporate entity they can't afford, then they have to take Sonny out. I don't agree with it, but at least if they do it and then admit to it and are honest to it, I can live with it. Look, and that's all I think people want, is honesty. All people want is honesty. It's not that hard of a thing to have. Honesty. You know, if you're honest, like, look, these are the rules that we are setting for our company. Yes, they've changed from what they used to be. But these are the rules now, and this is what we have to live by for financial reasons, whatever reasons. Yeah, it's selling out, but it's what we have to do. You're at least honest with them. I can not like it all I want, but at least they're honest. So, that's my take on that. With that, let's actually move on to the continued rumors of AJ Styles and the Bullet Club, which are now pretty much confirmed because of a new story that has come out this week that apparently AJ and the Bullet Club were actually in talks with TNA, and they had a handshake agreement. But there was no, like, signed contract, which is needed at this point in time for any contract in the wrestling organization. But TNA apparently dragged their feet again, and this was a red flag, and then, of course, apparently WWE, I guess, because where else, if it's not TNA, and we know it's not Ring of Honor, where the hell else are they going at this point? They're not going back to New Japan. WWE gave them, I would guess, again, can't say for sure, they haven't appeared yet. Wink, wink. Watch the Royal Rumble. Wink, wink. But somebody came with a better offer, and they took that offer. And it pissed off TNA because they were trying to get them for the premiere of Pop TV. And yeah, this just sounds like TNA having sour grapes. If they were trying to get them back, they didn't. I mean, honestly, you should know better. I mean, WWE long ago. I mean, this is the Lex Luger situation all over again. And mind you, unlike Lex Luger, where I blame Lex Luger for, during a time where there was an agreed upon, there was, you know, your word is your word, even though it's not legally binding, you know, and I blame Lex Luger for that. In this case, this is a situation where everybody in the industry knows that a word cannot be legally binding. TNA should have known that. And TNA should have known that there were other offers on the table, especially if they were trying to talk with AJ privately without his agent. So, yeah, this seems like sour grapes to me. I mean, I've watched a couple episodes now of the product on Pop TV, and like, I'm still completely lost as to what, I mean, like I said before, I've watched episodes here or there, but I just continuously lose interest, and I'll pop in months later to see it on YouTube, and now I can see it on Pop TV constantly, but I'm still a little lost. It's like, I just don't feel like I know who most of these people are. Now, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, with Michael Bennett there, what it's going to evolve into. Especially with them looking like they're going to push Eric Carter III to be a face, possibly. So that's going to be interesting. Moving on to NXT, though, I do want to talk about this week's NXT, which was a great episode. It featured Sami Zayn, Samoa Joe, and Baron Corbin all in action. Great match between Samoa Joe and Johnny Gargano. I like blanked on his name for a second. I apologize. But I actually want to talk about the match between Baron Corbin had. Now, Sami Zayn had a match at the beginning between Ty Dillinger, which he won with a Koji Clutch. The reason I want to talk about Baron Corbin's match is because, one, Baron Corbin, I cannot stop gushing about Baron Corbin and how great he looks. Everybody talks about Finn Balor being the one they want to bring up. I'm shocked they are not ready to bring Baron Corbin up yet. And I know why. He still is learning, but at the same time, he just looks great. And his moveset has become very dynamic, and he is galaxies away from when we first saw him at the beginning, or mid-year, I should say, of 2014, when he was first being brought onto TV. But his match was against one Rich Swann, of indie fame. And they're really, by the way, pushing this sort of indie destroyer gimmick for Corbin, which I actually like, and that will come up to play in just a couple minutes. But this match between Rich Swann and Baron Corbin is a perfect NXT match, and is a perfect example of what NXT is supposed to do. Because the match was basically not a squash match per se, like in a traditional sense, but the match was supposed to make Baron Corbin look like this big, almost unstoppable force of nature, at the same time being a debut and a chance to impress the brass backstage for Rich Swann, being his TV debut. And my God, did both men do an excellent job at looking great. I mean, Baron Corbin, again, he had the presence of him. He looked like an unstoppable force. All his moves came out as very dynamic. I mean, so simple, the way he punches, you know, makes him look dynamic and makes him seem special. At the same time, he needs to give a thank you to Rich Swann for selling the hell out of his moves. In particular, the back body drop where Baron Corbin hits it and Rich Swann does a flip and lands on his face. and the look on his face as spit came out of his mouth, mind you. Which, that was so great just because, you know, if you can't have blood, something visual like maybe spit unintentionally coming out of your mouth is maybe the next best thing. Again, it's that visual injury that we can see. It's a visual representation of pain and injury that we can see. And just the way he looked dazed and out of it and everything, and then of course, which allowed Corbin to take control at that point of the match, it was just wonderful. And also, Rich Swann looked dynamic in the match. You know, there's a point where, you know, he does like a double flip over and lands on his feet and everything, and the way he moves around the ring, a lot of maneuvers that he was able to pull off, standing drop kicks, reversals out of it, a tilt-a-whirl into a Hurricane Rana, this very stiff, like, roundhouse kick that, like, took Corbin down. It was like, oh my god. And of course the finish where he goes top rope, Corbin dodges it, Swan runs into him. Instead of hitting the end of days, hitting the deep six, which is his spinning, swinging side slam. And again, this goes back to the fact that Corbin's finisher, or at least his moveset, has become dynamic, and now he has these two really big moves that can finish a match with deep six and the end of days. And it just made him look dynamic. Swan looked tremendous. And it was like, to me so far, it was the match of the night as far as I'm concerned. Just because of what NXT was supposed to do, that was perfect the way it was supposed to be done. And that says nothing about how great Dillinger and Zayn was. More importantly, how great Gargano and Joe was. Now, I bring all this up also to talk about that this past Friday at the University of Central Florida at their arena, they had a special taping there. And there were a lot of things that happened. You had Carmella versus Bayley. You had Joe versus Zayn. I don't know who was number one contender. I won't spoil that. I won't spoil any outcomes of the matches in this point. Corbin, I do believe, had a match with one. I can't remember what name they gave him, but basically it was Biff Buziak, who was the other big independent signing along with Richard Swann that picked up. Now, again, like I said, they're pushing an indie killer, indie destroyer gimmick for Baron Corbin. You know, he hates all these indie guys who come in and think they can take his spot. Well, this comes into play later, because William Regal says he has a big announcement. A big announcement of a new international signee, and who is it at the end of the show? It's Austin Aries, the greatest man who ever lived. And he's keeping his name Austin Aries, by the way. Big thing Paris Reyes said Austin Aries. He's got a shirt that like has like sort of the Avenger A everything. As like, oh my god, I want that shirt. I'm going to be getting that soon. It's apparently already available on WWEshop.com. You're welcome, WWE. I just got my check in the mail. And as he's coming down to the ring, he gets attacked by Baron Corbin. Initially, immediately setting up what is more than likely going to be the first program for Austin Aries against one Baron Corbin. Austin Aries, a man we all want to see in WWE, is finally WWE. He's in NXT, which is a great spot for him. He can pass knowledge. He's going to put on tremendous matches, and I'm sure if Triple H gets a chance, there's a lot of people he'd like to bring up to the main roster. I mean, it means that one day we could, you know, if you're in NXT, there could be any day to where we might see you on the main roster. And can you imagine Austin Aries versus Seth Rollins, Austin Aries versus AJ Styles on a WWE stage? Austin Aries versus Sami Zayn, which we'll probably see in NXT, possibly. Austin Aries versus Kevin Owens. Yeah, I'm going to say it. Austin Aries versus John Cena. The fact that there's now all these dream matchups that I can see. Joe versus Cena, Aries versus Cena, Styles versus Cena, Nakamura versus Cena. Yeah, I'm a Cena fanboy, and the thing I want to see the most is Cena versus these top opponents. So, oh my god. So, yeah, Austin Aries is now in the WWE. And I guess only time will tell if Styles, Anderson, Gallows, and Nakamura will be too. Like, that's a question anymore. But we'll have to wait and see for confirmation, because as with anything, until they're actually standing in the middle of that ring, nothing is for sure, as I'm sure TNA can attest to now. But that's it for news. I think it's time for us to prepare, because we are continuing our look at the Raws of 1998, and when we come back, we're going to get into Raw that took place on January 18th, 1998, from San Jose. Welcome back, and it's time to get in to our look at the Raw of January 18th, 1998. This was the Royal Rumble Fallout show, so a lot of the storylines for this Raw were basically coming straight out of that. So, there's a whole thing of Shawn Michaels, at least for the first hour, looking for The Undertaker, and it kicked off the second hour, basically, with the gong hitting, and you think The Undertaker's coming down from the ceiling, and it turns out to be Shawn Michaels. So you had that. This is also where Mike Tyson and Vince McMahon were supposed to have a big announcement. So one, again, wrestling. I've made mention of this before, and it's going to sound like a broken record, and I have a feeling I'm going to be saying this a lot for the next couple months. Or at least until after WrestleMania. But, again, it's all these individual storylines. Some were building up. The Nation of Domination storyline building its feud and its what would be its big match at No Way Out in 1998 between Ken Shamrock, Ahmed Johnson, and the Disciples of Apocalypse, which is Chains, 8-Ball... And, I can't remember what the last one name is. But Chains, of course, being Brian Lee. And that had a good feeling to it again, the feud, because again, Rock screwing Ken Shamrock out of the Intercontinental title. And just, again, this is the feud we know we will continue to WrestleMania 1998. And I say that because we've already reviewed it here on CMG's Wrestling Reviews. But it's really interesting to see that develop, and it's developing fine, story-wise. I mean, the matches are short and everything, but it's continuing just fine. There was sort of a blow-away match for Owens, Taka Michinoku, I can't remember who else. It was somebody else. But they had with the Los Bratos. I know I mispronounced that name. I apologize. Again, it was basically promoting Owens for what's going to happen the next Raw, which is, again, in that second segment, one of the things that happens is, Triple H says, We screwed you out of the Rumble. I'm going to be nice, and I'm going to give you a European title shot next week. So, again, that was setting that up very nicely. Again, that DX segment, mind you, very interesting. Because, again, I mentioned before, it's very interesting, all these famous clips that we see. It's like, I'm seeing them now one after another. And so it's very interesting to see where all these actual segments come from and to see them in their entirety. And in case this one was, you know, the barbecue one, you know, they're barbecuing the Undertaker's attire as like, you know, me and Michaels have jumbo weenies, but China girl, show them what you brought to the barbecue. And she pulls out this big, like, salami log. It's like, she brought the big stick. And it's like, yep. this is classic D-Generation X. So you had the promo of Triple H on Owens. Of course, all leading up to this, as I said, was their hunt for the Undertaker. You know, they find Hurst, and they look inside, and there's all these girls, and they drag Michaels and Triple H inside, and China's like, oh, dear God. I'm going to go off and read. There's a point where Michael's like, they run into the minis division, and he picks one of them up, and it was like, do you understand English? It's like, they speak Spanish. It's like, I don't speak Spanish. We're an American. And it's like, classic villain Michaels. And of course, that leading up to that top of the hour where they reveal the ruse. You also had Kane and Paul Bearer at the beginning of the show cutting a promo saying, basically, you know what? The promo basically is the same as a Chris Jericho promo. So basically, to sum up the entire promo by Paul Bearer is,
I trolled all of you.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty much. But yeah, it was Paul Bearer saying, like, we had this plan for months and you fell for it. And Kane, now Kane is the new monster, everything. But of course, the highlight of the night and the moment that probably everybody remembers, probably besides the DX promo, since it gets played over and over again, is at the end of the night, Mike Tyson and Vince McMahon come out and they have this big announcement that at WrestleMania 14, on March, whatever, Mike Tyson, and then glass breaks and out comes Steve Austin. And that great promo where he runs down Austin, runs down McMahon. And of course, you know, if you're a little hard of hearing, I always got a bit of sideline with the help. Do you understand what I'm saying? So here's two of ya, middle fingers in the air to Tyson. Tyson pushes Austin. Austin tries to get at Tyson. Mass hysterica. And you, of course, you have Jim Ross going, Tyson and Austin! Tyson and Austin! It's mass hysteria! And of course, that great point where, you know, pushing Austin out of the ring, and Vince is like, you ruined it! You ruined it! Damn it! He's trying to kick at Austin. And again, just building that whole feud between Austin and McMahon. And just, it built Austin as this complete badass. Getting to watch the segment in its entirety. And I've seen it before, but to watch the build-up of the entire role to that segment was done brilliantly. Again, it really isn't anything special about this Raw. Most of the wrestling, again, is very much what it is. It's a lot of tag team stuff. Very interesting. You had the return of the Quebecers, which were, you know, again, the Mountie. Of course, they were the Quebecers long before Jean and I'm blanking on their names, and I apologize. But they would have become the Mountie, then they both be the Mounties, and they were tag team champions in 1984. And now they come back and they have these red trunks. One of them has an eye patch. They had a match with Mick with Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, which was fun. But as far as wrestling, there's no real good wrestling. Just a lot of chaos, story, and fun. So overall, very enjoyable. I'd give it, for a Fallout show, continuing story, and just overall enjoyment. I give it a 3.5 out of 5. Again, that wrestling keeps bringing it down, but again, those stories and the building of the stories are done perfectly. So that is it for our look at Raw from January 18th, 1998. That being said, it's time to get to our main topic of the night, that of course being the 2001 Royal Rumble match, which had the tagline of 30 men, every man for himself, one victor. It took place on January 21st, 2001, to an attendance of 16,056 at the New Orleans Arena in New Orleans, Louisiana. Sponsored by 1-800-COLLECT, which I do believe, if I remember, sponsored the 1998 Royal Rumble that we reviewed. Your co-commentators are Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Royal Rumble 2001. Sunday Night Heat match. Again, you don't have Sunday Night Heat, so we can't talk about it. But you had Lowdown, which is D'Lo Brown and Chaz, with Tiger Ali Singh, who I don't remember still being with the company. Like, I was watching Sunday Night Heat pretty normally at this point, but for whatever reason, I don't remember Tiger Ali Singh there. But he had a thing with that with Lowdown of. They faced off against Kaientai, which is Takemichi Noku and Funaki. The winner of the match would earn one spot into the Royal Rumble match. Of course, this would end up not counting because, as you'd see through vignettes through the night of Drew Carey, there's this whole story throughout the night of Drew Carey. He has this pay-per-view of this all-star comedy jam that I guess was going to be All-Star Improv Comedy Jam. I mean, that's, I guess, was like a uncensored version of Whose Line Is It Anyway, or something along those lines. And so he was coming to the WWE to see how they do pay-per-view. And, of course, immediately gets caught up in the sort of catfight bitch antics of one Stephanie McMahon and Trish Stratus, who was Vince's girlfriend at the time, and girl toy, or whatever you want to call it, and their cattiness, and of course, they're part of the main event, as, you know, Kurt Angle had hired Trish Stratus to be her manager, and of course, Stephanie was going to come out with her man, and the whole story of Vince and telling Steph, don't mess with Trish, don't mess with Steph, don't get in a fight, it embarrassed me, blah, blah, blah. Of course, they'll get in a fight, well, we'll get to that match later. Ultimately, Drew gets stuck in it. Vince gets jealous of Drew hanging out with Trish, who has this look of disgust about him. And so Vince puts Drew in the Royal Rumble match. Like, you want to see how pay-per-view doing? Why don't you join the Royal Rumble match? And he takes their spot. With this very funny segment where they're arguing about who should be in the spot later. And Vince is like, I'm sorry to say, things have changed and you've been taken. It's like, Tiger listening, like, who's taken the spot? Drew Carey. They're like, Drew Carey? Who's that? So, there was that. So, that amounted to nothing. Actually, interesting enough, there are 5 matches total, counting the Royal Rumble match. And all 4 of the undercard matches are title matches. Our first match of the night is for the WWF Tag Team Championship as the Dudley Boys of Bubba Ray and Devon Dudley face off against Edge and Christian, who are the champs. Now, one thing that's interesting to note is, especially with things that are considering that are going on these days, is that they had a whole concussion storyline going on. Like, that Devon had apparently suffered a concussion. He had been cleared, barely, apparently. And so they had that whole thing going on. And so there was a lot of targeting of the head. And I want to emphasize targeting in a safe, in that they weren't doing really any damage, as I can emphasize on. This was the time of the concerto, and in fact, when they would miss the concerto, and that would ultimately be Edge and Christian's undoing, is missing that move. But you know what? It was a really great tag team match. It was a great look at, again, what made the tag team division just that much more exciting during this time with the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Edge and Christian. Of course, this would all eventually lead up to that final big TLC match at WrestleMania 17, or TLC 2 as it'll be known, between Dudleys, Edge and Christian, and the Hardys. And again, you had the Dudleys who were the power, and the Hardys who were like the Daredevils, speedsters, and then Edge and Christian that was the balance. Like, they could go either way. Like, they could go fast on the Dudleys, they could go strong on the Hardys and vice versa, and they had the more wrestling pedigree there. And so this is a really good match. Dudley start out hot. Edge and Christian get an advantage on Devon, and again, with his head injury, taking advantage of that, continuously targeting the head. Devon did a wonderful job of selling the injury, being dazed and everything, and not being able to get to Bubba. Till, again, that Mish Concerto, which ultimately led to Devon getting in Bubba, and that changed in the tide. Edge and Christian are able to get control back, but they get caught trying to mimic and steal the "what's up" spot that leads to Edge being thrown out of the ring, and then Christian set up for the 3D, which leads to the 1-2-3, your new tag team champions, the Dudley Boys. So that was a really good match. The match following it was absolutely stupendous. And really, I think, one of the most underrated ladder matches in WWE history. I'm, of course, talking about Chris Benoit versus Chris Jericho for the Intercontinental title in a ladder match. They always talk about different ladder matches. There are many great ladder matches, but there are also some that I think are very underrated on how good they are. And this is one of them. Just great back and forth. Again, Chris Benoit not being a ladder specialist, not one of these type of specialists, being a just straightforward submission wrestler. And yet, him and Chris Jericho did a great job of doing different things with the ladder, and different things without the ladder. Just great back and forth. And that's why I love this feud, you know, so much. It's like, it wasn't your typical, you know, face starts out hot, heel controls most of it, face gets control, and then you rush to the end and who wins. This was just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And there, again, during this whole feud, even though Chris Benoit was technically the heel, it was one of those things to where Jericho would do heelish things, and Benoit would do heelish things, and with these two heelish wrestlers that was really, with Benoit being more heelish and Jericho being more neutral, obviously being the face though, again, back and forth between them, and things they did to each other, and then this match, you know, again, just spot after spot, and I don't want to call it spot, but moment after moment, to whether it be the diving headbutt off the ladder, which was, and missing, and how that built towards the finish. Of course, also the knocking of Benoit off the ladder to the floor. That ultimately led to Jericho having the advantage to get the title. That was... trying to remember it now. I apologize. And that may make it seem as if it was a bad... It's just like I watched it so long ago at this point. Like, I've already began watching the next Rumble and everything, so I'm trying to remember it in my mind. And maybe in that case, that's why it's not as remembered fondly, but the truth of the matter is still very underrated. Because it was a really good back-and-forth ladder match. I do remember that it's just back-and-forth, and, you know, the suicide dive that's missed, and then throwing Jericho into the wall, and it was just hard-hitting, and it was brutal, and it was just so enjoyable, and... I do know this. I looked at the time. The time was, it was apparently a 20-minute match. It's like, holy shit, that match seemed like it was a half hour. But it was that good, like, oh my god, this just keeps going and going. And I know it's long, but it feels longer. But it feels longer in that good way. Because when you're watching good wrestling, it's like, yeah. Our next match was not as long, though. Our next match would be 3 minutes and 32 seconds. It's for the WWF Women's Championship, as Ivory the champion with Stevie Richards would defeat China. Now, defeat is a lucrative word. This is all part of a storyline that would lead to China versus Ivory at WrestleMania. But during the match again, China wanted to get revenge on Ivory, who they had basically broken her neck, kayfabe. And because they targeted her because she did a Playboy spread and everything. And China was going to have it. And so she was going to take the title from Ivory. And China controls this entire match until the point where she goes for a backhand spraying elbow into the corner. And the story that they build is that the whiplash of her neck injured her and paralyzed her. Allowing Ivory to get the 1-2-3 easy. And they really sell this because they have Jerry Lawler get off the thing and, like, check on her. They really build the towards the kayfabe. Gee, what a shock. Somebody actually protecting kayfabe about the injury. And she's ultimately wheeled off. I say kayfabe because she really wasn't injured, but this was building towards the throne where they kept her off TV until WrestleMania, where they had her came back and beat Ivory at WrestleMania 17. Again, there's really nothing more to say in the match other than talk about the story process, because it was just China dominating. And it was fun to watch her dominate Ivory. I'll say that, but, you know, that injury, I think the whole injury and them getting her out of the ring lasted longer than the match itself. And, of course, there's also... This is during a time where she was backstage having a lot of arguments with WWE. And, again, being angry at Triple H. And I don't know how much that came into play with them deciding to do this storyline. I just know that... There's nothing more to say to it. They were building storyline... I almost hate to call it a match. It's more like it was a segment. And I hate to say that about something as important as the Women's Championship, but that's what they did. Of course, this would be before Trish Stratus and Lita would gain the opportunity to be champion and, you know, make the Women's Champion transcend to what it was. That brings us to our... one of our first co-main events, or I should say our first co-main event, which is Kurt Angle and Trish Stratus, or Kurt Angle with his manager Trish Stratus versus Triple H the challenger with his wife, Stephanie McMahon Helmsley, for the WWF Championship match. You know, this overall was a good match, but again, you had two heels going against each other. And it was funny to listen to the crowd to see which way they chanted, because some were cheering for Angle, some were cheering for Triple H, and just back and forth. And again, it was very fun to see Kurt Angle, who was just learning. So Triple H did control a majority of the match, but it's not like Kurt Angle had the moveset he had now. Like, really all he had was the angle slam. He didn't have the ankle lock. He didn't have all those things. He only had the basic stuff, so the fact that they were able to go 20 minutes with this match, or in this case it was 24 minutes and 16 seconds, I thought actually was very interesting. Of course, a lot of that also had to do with a lot of the clusterfuckery that was going on. The first one that was able to go on was, Triple H has Kurt pinned and Trish pulls him out, saving Kurt's title. Which leads to Stephanie and Trish getting into a goddamn cat fight. Which leads to officials, including Vince McMahon, having to get out and bring them to the back. That leads to a point where the referee gets knocked down. Kurt uses the situation to take advantage. Which ultimately leads to Triple H, I think, using... I can't remember if he used the sledgehammer or not, but he ultimately cheats to get advantage. And it leads to him getting the pedigree. But as he's trying to wake the referee, out comes Stone Cold. Of course, Triple H had, like, cost Steve Austin the title a couple weeks back before. So Steve Austin comes out, pulls Triple H out, and they have a brawl that goes around the ring and leads to him stunning Triple H and then hitting him over the head with a steel chair. And at that point, there's a new... the ref finally gets in the ring. Kurt Angle makes the cover. 1, 2, 3. Wrestling-wise, it was very good. And for the most part, enjoyable. There's no moments I really remember. There was a great reversal into the Angle Slam. But at the same time, compared to what would happen in the Rumble, nothing stood out. That's the thing. It's like, it was a really well wrestled match, and I enjoyed it. I would watch it again, but there's nothing that really sticks out about it. And ultimately, there's a lot of great matches, I think, that are very good, but not many people remember them because there's nothing about the match that sticks out. In fact, the thing that sticks out the most about this match is, again, the character building and the story building here that was, you know, Triple H and Stone Cold and their story, and their continuing backstabbing of each other. The thing I find funny here is, you know, in thinking about it, ultimately, Stone Cold would do a lot of heelish maneuvers leading up to WrestleMania, and maybe that should have been the sign of us seeing a heel turn. I don't think a lot of us did. But, again, very enjoyable match, really well done world championship. I don't know. I think maybe the only thing I can think of is that ultimately The Rock would win the title from Angle, and that would lead up to him facing Austin, who, of course, Austin would beat him. I think maybe Rock should have had maybe 2 months as champion leading up to that. So maybe it should have been The Rock and Angle. But, you know, the way they did it. Maybe Rock had faced and Austin had cost him and he got a rematch, and that would have been built more towards their match at WrestleMania. Again, that's booking damn near 15 years later. So that takes us to our Royal Rumble match. So it's time to go by the numbers. For the 2000 Royal Rumble, winner was Stone Cold Steve Austin, who came in at number 27. He lasted 9 minutes and 43 seconds. Though it's tentative, probably shorter, because when he came out, he would be jumped in by Triple H, and they would brawl in the entranceway, which would lead him to being left bloodied when slammed into multiple items and hit with chairs by Triple H. I jokingly also call this the ECW Rumble, because in particular, Raven, when he comes in at number 7, would bring in Hardcore Toys, and up until Kane comes in, Grandmaster Sexy, there's a lot of weapons used, and there's weapons used throughout the match. The longest wrestler that lasted would be Kane, who came in at number 6. He'd be the last wrestler eliminated by Stone Cold. He lasted 53 minutes and 46 seconds. The second longest would be The Rock, who lasted 38 minutes. And the third longest, as I'm looking to try to determine, I think would be Bradshaw. As I'm looking, yeah, Bradshaw would be the third longest at 17 minutes and 40 seconds. Just let me double check. Yeah, that we did have a lot of short times. Like, there were a lot of under 10-minute times. Like, Kane coming at number 6, and then after Grandmaster Sexy came in, you know, he ultimately would eliminate everybody who was in the ring at the time, which would be Raven, Al Snow, Perry Saturn, Steve Blackman, Grandmaster Sexy. Notable entries into this Royal Rumble of surprises, everything. Of course, as I mentioned, you had Drew Carey, who came in at number 5. And as he came in, Matt and Jeff Hardy eliminate themselves. Matt Hardy was number 3. Jeff Hardy was number 1. So he's standing in the ring all by himself when all of a sudden Kane comes in. Oddly enough, Drew Carey lasted 2 minutes and 54 seconds, mind you. There's this whole thing where he tried to shake his hand. Kane had him. That's when Raven comes out, hits him, and seeing that his life was in danger, Drew Carey immediately threw himself over the top rope. Drew Carey is one of the smartest men ever in the Royal Rumble. The notable wrestlers besides Drew Carey, one of the returns was the Honky Tonk Man. You know, it's very funny. So far, all 3 Royal Rumbles that we have watched, I believe have had the Honky Tonk Man. I'd have to go back and check on 91. I believe he was in there. You had, of course, all members of Right to Censor. Taz, I think, had the shortest time at 10 seconds. Let me double it. Yeah, unfortunately, Taz had the dubious honor of the shortest time in the Rumble at 10 seconds. This is pretty much the stamp on Taz's career in WWE being done, unfortunately, which is really sad, considering he only debuted a year ago, but WWE never just had anything with him, which I think was really sad. Interesting wrestlers of note, like I said, Perry Saturn's in this. You had Albert, who was at the time part of TNA. Again, Matt Bloom was the current trainer at NXT. You know, there's this wrestler that really interests me. His name's Kay Quick. I don't know what ever happened to this guy. Maybe we should send our troop to go find out what happened to him. I wonder if he can figure out, because he's always able to find the truth on what happened to these type of people. But he came in number 19 at 7 minutes and 53 seconds. So somebody tell our troop to go find out what happened to Kay Quick. Crash Holly was in it at last about 2 minutes 31 seconds before being eliminated by Kane. Of course, this is also the Royal Rumble where Kane set the record for most eliminations up until a couple years ago when Roman Reigns broke it with 11. Another return was Haku, who came in at number 29. Some of the big eliminations that would happen, like I said, Kane would eliminate a lot of people. I'm trying to look at the big names. Rikishi had a big elimination of The Undertaker with a sidekick. super kick that, like, launched him over the rope. The Rock would eliminate Rikishi. Big Show would once again be eliminated by The Rock. Of course, he would take it. Big Show had returned after injury at this point, and he would take his aggression out of The Rock by chokeslamming through a table. So there was some clusterfuckery going on, giving both The Rock and Stone Cold arrest. The Rock would ultimately be eliminated by Kane. He as one of the third last. I believe he was back body dropped over the rope by Kane. And of course the building segment for the end was Kane and Austin. And Kane finally gets up and he has a chair, but Austin catches him with a stunner, and then followed by three chair shots, knocks him over the rope, I believe, with a clothesline to win the Rumble. Bloodied and all. Overall, I found it to be a very enjoyable Rumble. This Rumble, I mean, we reviewed last year, 2000. And 2000 didn't have this feel, but 2001 here has very much the markings of what would we now know as the modern Rumble. You know, the surprise entries, the celebrities, like Drew Carey, or surprise returns like the Honky Tonk Man, Big Show returning from injury. You know, if there's somebody who's been injured for a long time and they haven't come back yet, the Rumble is usually a spot they come bring them back in, because honestly, the Rumble is a good match to test, you know, their popularity, what they can do, because it's a quick assertion, and even if they're eliminated only have a 10-minute run, it's a good test of their abilities. Unless you've already tested their abilities and plan to give them the title. Or have them win the match, a.k.a. John Cena when he returned in 2008 at number 30. And of course you had surprise like Haku who came back. So, overall, I found this to be a very enjoyable Rumble. There's like all these little mini segments. You had the mini segment that was like the hardcore segment with Raven and Al Snow and Steve Blackman and Perry Saturn, where they all got to showcase their specialties as part of the hardcore division. You know, in particular, you had Al Snow rolling a bowling ball into Raven's hoo-ha. It was either Raven or was it Kane? I think it was Kane. He did it too. That was funny. Steve Blackman, of course, had a little short sticks that he was able to use, and they did that. Honky Tonk Man had a very funny segment where he comes in, he's like, "Yo, hold off there, big fella. I know everybody wants to hear me sing my song." So he starts singing. Kane grabs the guitar and smashes it over the head of Honky Tonk Man and throws him out. And like for the next couple of entries, the referees are still picking up the pieces. And then you had the middle part that really built off that when Rock came in after Honky Tonk Man, and that built up the ring, and it'll be eliminations here or there. And they would build up usually to big people, because from The Rock coming in to, let's say Crash Holly, the only people that eliminate people would be The Rock, Undertaker, or Big Show, or Kane. So they were just fodder for those guys to eliminate people. Steve Austin had three eliminations. The Rock had three eliminations. Undertaker had 1, 2, 3. You know, pretty much everybody else averaged 3. Big Show had 2. Undertaker actually had 4 because he had one that was with his brother Kane. Rikishi had one big one, but where he would be eliminated. Like I said, overall, it was a very enjoyable Rumble. You could break it up into spots. You had that first, and again, like I said, the markings of the Rumble. In this case, like the first part was up to number 11. Then you sort of had that little rest with the Honky Tonk Man, number 12. The Rock coming out at 13 started the second part. That would go all the way up to Big Show probably being coming out at number 23. And that was the sort of the next big wave. Whereas like Big Name small name, big name, small name, because you have Crash Holly, then Undertaker comes out. Scotty Too Hotty and Stone Cold comes out. Billy Gunn, Haku, and lead up to Rikishi coming out. So it has all those markings to where you have that first part where you have a lot of fun, it's a lot of build-up and a lot of funny segments. The middle part that builds up the participants, and then that rush that is those final entries and them clearing out the ring and ultimately building to whoever wins it. So you had a lot of those earmarkings to what would be the modern Rumble. It had a lot of good moments. Like I said, the Honky Tonk Man elimination is really fun. Sticks out in my mind. Drew Carey's. Well, it's just a brilliantly done spot. Ultimately, the victory in the Rumble by Stone Cold and the build-up to it with the chair shots, I mean, made it look like it was a massive elimination of Kane, especially after he eliminated 11 people. Kane's spot throughout the Rumble. So there's a lot of good segments to talk about. Ultimately, looking back, I think this is a really good pay-per-view. A lot of really good matches. Maybe not ones that stick out in your mind, but they're good examples of what good wrestling at this time was. Great opening tag team match. Again, like I said, you could skip pretty much the women's title match, but the Intercontinental match is a really underrated ladder match. Triple H and Angle is a really underrated title match that was really good amid the clusterfuckery. And then a really, really good Rumble that ultimately led to the ascension of Stone Cold's third Royal Rumble win, to where, you know, again, he's the only man to win the Royal Rumble 3 times. And so, I think it's time to break it all down for last thoughts. As far as my favorite moments, number three would be the Dudleys winning the title. Number two would be the missed headbutt by Chris Benoit, because it was just a massive risk and it looked like it hurt, and it's ultimately what built towards the end for that match. But number one is pretty much I could have made that list all Royal Rumble spots, because the Royal Rumble was the big thing of this pay-per-view. But if I only had to pick one, I'd say Drew Carey's time in the Rumble. Because it's very memorable, it's very funny, and overall very enjoyable. And he I don't know if it's Hall of Fame worthy, but, you know, he was there. Favorite matches, number three would be the tag team opening match between the Dudleys and Edge and Christian. Number two would be the Intercontinental ladder match between Benoit and Chris Jericho. But my favorite would definitely be that Royal Rumble match. The Royal Rumble match was the star of the show, and it was the star of the show. Overall, I think it's a very enjoyable pay-per-view. As I said, a couple of underrated title matches in the ladder match for the Intercontinental title and the World Heavyweight Championship match. A great opening tag match that really gets you fired up. And then, of course, the Royal Rumble match is just very enjoyable. If I had any criticism, it's how short the card is. Because there's not much to talk about. There's four title matches, one of which doesn't last more than 5 minutes. But at the same time, it does give these matches the time to put out a quality match. And that's ultimately what happens. I think the Royal Rumble from 2001 is very underrated. Because you have some underrated match. The Rumble itself, I think, is still underrated. It's a great Rumble. With Kane going wild, eliminating 11 people. Stone Cold getting his third win. I think when people think about Stone Cold Steve Austin's Rumble victories, they look at 97 and 98 more than they do 2001. And he probably did more in those Rumbles than he did here. But still, it was a really good outing, and ultimately, I definitely suggest checking out this Rumble. This is a really good WWE pay-per-view, especially for this time period, as they're now in the midst of what I like to call that second part of the Attitude Era, or at least that second part that's now winding down, as they're about to go into that, as it's starting 2001, and it's about to transition into that whole invasion storyline. And like I said, I would say that the Attitude Era ended WrestleMania 2002. And you had that transitional period between that and then Brock winning, which was sort of the ushering of that Attitude... Not Attitude Era, but Ruthless Aggression Era. So, all in all, Royal Rumble 2001, I give it a 4 out of 5. It's a really good pay-per-view. I highly suggest checking it out. So that's it for this episode of CM Juice Wrestling Reviews. Remember, if you have any emails or comments you want to leave the show, remember you can email them at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you find by going to Facebook and searching for the Absolution Network. And of course, you can always leave a comment on the site at www.an.132productions.com. And of course, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content. This, of course, includes Shin Takakuro and his wrestling and anime videos, John Romus and his Sentai videos, and of course, my Tom Sprogative, Tokyo SOS relaunch episodes, and everything. Everything that I'm doing, I'm coming out on the site. And of course, Tom's Tsunami D&D, and much, much more. And of course, make sure you check out all our friends on the sideboard site. That, of course, includes our good friends over at the WrestleCast, Maddie J, and TWK of the WrestleCast. And that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews, episode 61. Next time, we finish the Rumble month, as we're going to look back at this Sunday's Royal Rumble 2016. We'll be also taking a look at the Raw of... Let me count this down. Of January, I believe it's... What's the 25th? 1998. And then, of course, the main review will be... We're going back to Philly. We're going back to Philly, where it all started again. Yes, we're going to go take a look at a Royal Rumble that happened in Philly. No, not last year's Royal Rumble. No, I'm talking about Royal Rumble 2004, when a rabid Wolverine went from number one to win it all. I'm, of course, talking about the Royal Rumble 2004. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
Every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I believe it. I'm too negative, I but I believe. Yes, I believe. I said I believe. I stand among the feet when people are down on one knee. I fight with all of my might to get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. And man, I live that fast life, but you're free.